Hi, I'm Steve.
And I'm Simon. Welcome to the Business and Beers podcast,
where we chat to our guests about real life experiences and the practical steps to their success, with a ton of knowledge bombs getting dropped along the way.
While enjoying a beer together, don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Good afternoon to all our faithful podcast listeners. We're super excited to bring you another episode of Business and Beers. This episode, it's something that I think has been long in the pipeline. Myself and Leo have been chatting a lot in the background. And super excited to have Leo Page join us on today's episode. I think Leo has really got the real story of what it's like to be an entrepreneur, going through the highs, the lows, the middles, and pretty much everything in between. And just a real testament to what it's like to follow your passion as an entrepreneur. So Leo, I'm not going to steal your thunder. If you want to, you know, give our listeners, I would say readers, but that's a bit awkward. Yeah. if you want to give our listeners a little background about who Leo is. And if you haven't listened to any of our podcasts, you know that, we're going to throw a curveball. And what's one thing that not many people know about Leo?
Okay, lekker. Well, good afternoon or evening, whenever you're going to be hearing this. Thank you very much, firstly, to Simon and Stephen for hosting me. I think this is a great honor. It's always good to be part of other people's, I would say, experiences and how they are sharing their information out onto life and to other people. And everything's a journey. Everything is always discovery. It's everything is new and fresh. And what you guys are doing, I commend it. I've listened to a couple of your shows and some of the topics that you guys touch on. And it's just basic life and basic business and what you guys experience as business. So thank you for letting me weigh in and throw some input on from my side and where I come from and my background. So I'm basically, what I call it, an entrepreneur. I like to think I'm used to be called a bull in a china shop with my very first serious corporate company I used to work for, because I did sales for them. And all that I basically did was I just went in for the kill with every single sale. So I didn't have any inhibitions when it came to speaking to people or doing deals with people. It was just get it done. And, that was the thrill of the hunt. I come from old school business, selling tactics where you phone in and you hammer until you get that business from the client. And when you get the client, then the role swap again, where you're basically taking care of your client, so you're ruthless when it goes in and you cut prices and you do what you have to get that sale through. And then from there on, you basically, then you sort of slow down the pace. I worked for 7 years for an import company. We did raw material and timber. And within that 7 years, I started as a sales assistant. So how they would work in those days, you had like an account manager on the road, and then I would be in-house. So the account manager would get all the business through. He would phone me, I would process the invoicing, and then from there on, I would, of course, action all the paperwork on the admin side. Naturally, of course, you don't get phoned every hour on hour. You'll get phoned, on a full workday, you'll probably get called about 10 times, and then that's it. So I would get a bit bored, and I would actually start phoning clients on my own. I would actually investigate the accounts that we used to manage, and I would ask the client, why are you buying this product? Why are you buying that product? And then I eventually started phoning clients out on my own, and I started generating revenue for the company. And it led to me becoming an account manager of my own. I went on the road for them for the last 3 years of my term with this specific business. And I was doing well. I was doing about 3.5 million rands worth of sales per month. But what happened was I was 24 years old when this happened. Now, the other salesmen then were my age. Now, I'm 36 at the moment now. So they were getting paid like almost 70,000 rand a month, and I was only getting about 24. So I said to the owners of the company, I said, guys, I'm doing exactly the same as what the other salesmen are doing. Why are you not paying me more? Why are you not paying me what the other guys are being paid? And they said to me straight, well, you're too young. You don't know yet, and this and that, and you're hot-headed. And now everything that they want to exploit out of your weaknesses immediately gets brought up. So you sort of like taking a back step, but maybe they're right or this and that. And unfortunately, I didn't take it like that. I thought, well, stuff you guys. If you this is where you're going to do things, then I'm going to leave. And I sort of like made them fire me because I eventually just pissed them off so much. I didn't report back to them what I wanted to me to report. And I still gave them the figures, but I stopped following the rules of how they wanted to do business. And it eventually led to me actually resigning. I just said some stuff this, I'm leaving. And when I did that, I probably did what any other disgruntled employee would do, or a salesman would do, an opportunistic salesman. And that was, I just phoned the clients that I used to trade with and I said, I'm not working with this company anymore, but if you do need those resources, please give me a call and I will try and supply from my side. I had one client that I had it was like a true blue customer. No matter what I did, this client would always support me. And it was a lady. She owned a timber company. She still owns the company. She's there and based in Pretoria. She said to me, oh, no, look, if you can organize me some timber, I will buy it from you. I phoned up a supplier. It was for exotic African wood. The order value was about R500,000. That's what the sale value was. My buying value was about R250,000.
Wow.
So I said to them, okay, well, I said to the supplier, look, I don't have the money. I'm going to supply to this client. You know who they are. I said, this lady wants to deal with me. They said, fine, very well. We will give you the load basically sort of on a 24-hour credit line. And then once you get your payment, we expect you to pay us. And I said, very well. Phoned her up. I said, I can get you the stock. She said, well, bring it. If I'm happy with it, I'll pay you straight away. Delivered the lumber. She was happy. She basically instructed her counterpart to pay me right then and there. Within 5 seconds, I had R500,000 in my bank account. And I was then 26 years old.
So it's like your first step of entrepreneurship.
Very, very. Well, actually, that wasn't my first attempt. I attempted many businesses before that. I just did it. It never took flight. But that was basically the kickoff to me going into business on my own. And within my very first 6 months of running on my own, I managed to do about R9 million worth of timber sales. And it just grew. I kept maintaining. And unfortunately, what happened was with this established business that I was dealing with, I took a lot of business away from them. So on the one aspect, I was very angry with them. I wanted to prove a point to them. I'm worth more than what you thought I was. And I adamantly showed it to these guys. And on the back foot, what happened was they lost business. Hmm. And when they lost business, they did what any other business would do. They started laying people off. They started reducing. They started slowing down. They had to take different approaches to basically absorb this loss of business. Not that I took all of their business away, but I made a proper dent. I wasn't able to do R3 million a month in sales, but I was doing about R1 million a month. So I was taking 30% of business away from these guys, from the market. Long short, I excelled at such a rapid rate. You got to understand now, when you're 26 years old and you are actively doing R1.5 million to R2 million per month in sales, and 50% of that business was cash, I would basically store the money up. And then eventually I'd pay all of my accounts and then I'd see, but hang on, yes, I've got like R250,000 at my house. I didn't even have it in the bank account. It was cash money in my hands in the safe. So I started.
Just gotta hope SARS doesn't listen to this podcast, yeah.
Ah, well, they can listen. They hate me already, so that's fine. It's water under the bridge right now. It doesn't matter. They're still doing well. But you get into this mindset of managing money and making money is not the same thing. You can be a brilliant salesman. You can do R100 million a year for your client or for your company each year, or you can whatever the sums are. It's easy to make money. It's difficult to manage your money. If you are sitting with a bank account and you've got a credit card, and if you swipe now, I can spend 10 bar or 10,000 rand. It's not going to hurt me at the end of the month. You start becoming arrogant. And that's exactly what happened to me. I was one of the first 100, I think it was the first 100 people in South Africa when the GTI 7 launched. I bought one. I bought a Polo GTI for my wife. We never drove it. It was just parked in the garage. It was just there for niceness. I had the Amarok double cab. I had a Hilux double cab, Aki. I had a fleet of cars. My living cost per month back then was about 135,000 rand a month. So that's how much I needed just to live on. And of course, you start becoming more confident in yourself the more money you're commanding, or what you think you're commanding. I'm rather going to say what you think you're commanding. And I had a client at the final year, the final process of this little business that I had then, one client made an order with me, ordered R500,000 worth of stock from me. He said he will pay me within 30 days. I believed him because I traded with this guy for 7 years prior to my own business. And the guy didn't pay me. Phoned him up. I said, what's happening? Why aren't you paying? Oh, no, we closed business down and this and that. And, the economy was bad and this guy did this and that. Long short, all that this guy did was he liquidated his business. So if you want to do, if you want to do people in smartly, start a business, run it right, and then start running up big accounts, and then you legally go and liquidate. And then what you do is you hide your assets. So he hid all the raw material. He moved it to another place. They came and they auctioned everything off, but he was still sitting with the majority of the stock. So then he just restarted a new business.
Yeah.
I, at the end, lost everything. This is at 28 years old. So from 26 till 28 years old, I was flying high. I was doing my thing. And this one guy came and he just pulled out a little, you've got a little house of cards. Your business is made out of a house of cards. And he just pulled out the bottom card and bloop, the entire empire, what I thought was, just collapsed in one day. I lost everything.
So pretty much like overnight.
Overnight, I was from a millionaire down to a poor ass, typical wobnob. And I think the worst thing that happened to me was, it's not the fact that I lost the money. It's not the fact that I lost the business. It's the fact that I failed. And I don't know if this is going to be applying to ladies, but ladies listen anyway. If a man loses his pride, he basically loses his self-worth. And that's exactly what happened to me.
It's like constantly getting kicked in the nuts.
Exactly. You want to prove to everybody, I am the man. I'm going to do this. I'm going to be a success. I'm going to be Mr. Money. I'm going to do all the nice things. I'm going to show to everybody that ever did me wrong in life. I'm going to show you, I'm going to do it. And you must be, and when I drive past you, I'm not going to expect you to acknowledge me, but you know that you got pride. You build up the self-expectation of what you are. And it just got took away. It just got taken away straight away. So I developed an alcohol problem. I was already drinking heavily when I was, starting the business because it's stress. You gotta make sure you gotta pay accounts, you gotta pay staff, you've got vehicles that you gotta maintain. You've got all of those things that you gotta look after. So that's already weighing on you. So now you're 26 years old, you're supposed to be, having a good time with life. That's where you're learning to do things. I immediately took on the responsibility of a company that was established for 40 years, and I thought I was gonna do it in the same way. And it flopped. So I fast-tracked the business too quickly. My expansion or my growth was way too fast for me to handle. And I just basically abused everything. I didn't look after my money. I wasn't being diligent. I wasn't being careful. It just got taken away from me. But saying that you're going to be careful, it's, you're never assured of when the shit's going to hit the fan. I can promise you one thing, though, the shit will hit the fan eventually. And when that happens, how big is your umbrella?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that officially takes a cake, I think, for the longest intro into business and beers. So
I'm sorry.
if there was a war, that would be it. But I think that's one thing, chatting with Steve and listening to your story, is that you've got such a powerful and impactful story, is that it's actually hard not to sit and listen and definitely want to jump into that. And I think before we get into the cream of the ice cream now, it's what's one fact that not many people know about Leo, or one interesting thing
I'm very good at communicating with people, but I've got an absolute fear of talking to people.
Like public speaking or just cold calling or...
Yeah, I've actually got a fear of actually going into any room. If I don't know who you are, I can't go and talk to you unless I've got a plan to go and talk to you. So we're doing now, we can communicate fluently, but I cannot out of my own go up to you and go and greet you and go and talk to you. I've got a bit of a complex.
Huh. That's like a side note I'm going to put there. And I think Steve and I chatted about this a long time ago, but in terms of sales, cold calling, right? And maybe you and I are the only sales oaks and Steve the third or whatever, but still to today, if I have to pick up the phone for a cold call, I don't shit my pants because then I'd have a lot of pants at work, but it's terrifying. It's terrifying thinking that you pick up the phone, you're going to phone some random person, like guy or girl. They're going to be interested in what you're saying. But like majority of the time, those people are like, this like ass is phoning me.
Like, and why it's an inconvenience. Are you phoning me? What the fuck are you trying to sell? Excuse my language, but John, it's about that.
Brilliant.
I think it's I just want to touch on something because I just saw when you spoke about your business, obviously the first lady that gave you your first deal, it was that person gave you the opportunity, right? And that's what I really want to touch on. And I think that's what's really important for me in business. It's that first client that gives you the opportunity. That's where you build up the confidence to say, hey, this thing can actually be a business. Let me get this ball rolling. But it's twofold. The last person you gave the chance to also ruined your business. So I think for you now, obviously with the years of experience, with it all behind you, it's like, how do you actually identify those good opportunities versus a bad opportunity? You know what I mean? It's like the good apples versus the bad apples.
So being, if I can call it my degree, I'll call it a degree in kakpraat, as I like to say, is I've been doing sales, sure, ever since I've been working. What you tend to do is you tend to pick up mannerisms, communication lines of how people deal with you. You also get to see how people run their business and how they are moving. So this lady that gave me this opportunity, she's an extremely, extremely tough ass. I promise you, if you, like we supply timber to her. If one of the planks was rotten, she would just reject the entire load and say, I don't want to buy this. This is cuck. Because she, of course, knows now, you know, she's got to buy quality. So she doesn't care about the price that she has to pay. She cares about quality because she supplies quality again to her clients. And she slowly grew a business. Just to give you a little intro on this poor lady, she married to, was about a second husband that she was married to. They bought a plot out in Silverton. And then what they did was he bought a bunch of kiat out from, I think it was Angola or Mozambique. And they were living on this plot with this lumber in a caravan. And he was a pilot. And what happened was he just went to go do a little flight, you know, on one of those Cessnas. He got a heart attack and he died. And then she was left alone with all of this timber. That was their retirement money. And she was forced to basically just go and start selling this. And now she owns like an entire block in Silverton. And she's just one of those, you know, she's like a lady with an iron fist. You know, she's like the Queen of England, exactly the same. You're very, you know, she's just direct and straight. And then this guy that did me in, he again was the opposite end. You know, he was jumping from one province to another province, you know, because he starts a business somewhere, then the business fails, or he embezzles money, then he starts a new business again in another province. And so he moves. But when you go to his business, you see flashy cars, you see all of the lack of things happening on in this company. And you think, yes, this oak must be a hustler. This oak is moving, you know, he's doing the thing. And then when he starts talking to you, it's a winding speak, you know, it's always big speak, big, you know, we're going to do this with you. We're going to buy so many, you know, whatever we've got a running account with this one company for 3 million rand a month. If you give us good prices, we'll move all of that business onto you. So it's always promising, promising, promising. So they are bullshitting you. Just like a salesman bullshits a customer saying, oh, my product's better than my competitors. Your client will do the same to you, to exploit you to the point of where you can get just the cheapest rate and you go for it and you pay for it. And you know, by paying for it, I mean, you supply, I mean, and you get almost peanuts back from them. So it's who you deal with at the end of the day and how they communicate with you. And I've picked this up now. I've been doing now sales. If I can call it sales, I've been in business from working for myself and working for other companies for close to 18 years now. So I know when I'm going to engage with a person, I know what to look for in the person. I know how his mannerisms are. I can pick up on the way that he's speaking to me, just in the way that his voice tone is working. And I can see, yes, I can deal with you, or no, I'm not going to deal with you. And if I want to deal with you, but I don't trust you, I'm going to be a bit more diligent with how I'm going to be trading with you.
But no, I mean, if you had to go back to call it those early days, so now you've obviously moved away from the corporate, you're angry with these oaks, you want to make like gang cash, you know, youngster, you're living like the high life. So, I mean, if you had to look back at that and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's almost like call it lessons for entrepreneurs is, you know, when you're starting out, not necessarily every contract is going to be for you. And I think that's a big lesson as like an entrepreneur to realize that some business is just not worth chasing. You know, it might seem like there's a pot of gold, but actually like a rainbow, the rainbow never hits the pot of gold.
And it's a pot of shit, actually.
And I think the second thing is like you say, is really identifying the people that you're working with. I mean, if you had to look back, you know, regardless of just taking the contract, I mean, if you had to be critical about yourself, were there warning signs besides jumping the province and the way that he spoke that, you know, if you had to look back the moment you meet this guy, you'd be like, nope, not going to deal with you.
Yeah, there is. There's definitely, if I can give you a tip on how you deal with people, is how do you deal with yourself? You've got a specific way on how you want things done, how you expect things to be done for you. And if you can't pick up those key traits in the client or the person that you're engaging with, then I would just say stay away, because it's better to deal with somebody that you've got common ground on. So to give you a simple example, this guy, I dealt with both. So the guy that did me in had a smooth mouth, you know, quick talker, lacquer, and that's the way that I communicate, you know, with my clients. But on the same sense, this lady told me straight out, she expects things to be done. I want it like this, X, A, B, C to D. That's what I want. These are the lines you have to underscore before I will deal with you. And she had discipline behind her. So from me again, I am disciplined. I'm disciplined when it comes to what I want to give my client. I don't want to just go to a person and I'm not there for your money. I'm there for your relationship. I'm there to build a relationship with you, because everybody misconstrues business as being a short sprinted race. It's not. It's a marathon.
Yeah, that's exactly what my next question was going to be for you, is around the relationship. I think a few podcasts that Simon and I have chatted about, we've realized the importance of a relationship, especially between like a sales team and the client. But I think from an entrepreneurship perspective, if I could just give an input, like, one of my first clients that I got from the first week of running my business, we're now almost 2 years in, 2.5 years in, and now her invoice is, she's still with us, but her invoice is 10x'd with us, you know, and it's just because of the relationship that we've built. I worked with her at a previous agency, and then when she found out I'm on my own, she's like, no, I need to support Steve. And now through relationship and there's a bit of give and a bit of take on her side, and it's vice versa, but it's just building that relationship that we now trust each other wholeheartedly, that it's like, if we go after a new client or new business, she has my best interests at heart, and I know she does. And I think that's exactly what you need to do when you start a business, is to, even me, there's some lucrative contracts that are on the table and then it looks really good on paper, but you just need to trust your gut. And I don't know if you would agree or disagree on that, but that client that did you in, your gut might've been screaming and you're just ignoring it because you see the flashy cars, you see the talk.
Exactly. No, I actually had a moment of hesitation because I thought it wasn't the money wasn't the problem. It was funding that shortfall that was the problem for me. And I knew for a fact, and I said to myself, hang on, you are buying this at the end of the year. And you said you're going to pay me at the end of the year. Now, as we all know, in any industry type, getting money in from anybody over December is a nightmare. You just don't get the money in. It gets paid in late. You only see your money by the 10th or 15th of Jan. And then you've got December's debit orders that went through. And then, of course, Jan's debit orders. So now you're not sitting here to fund. Like for me, I had to fund almost 135 grand every month. Now I don't fund 135 anymore. Now I'm sort of funding now 270. And that's 50% of a little bit more than 50% of what I've actually laid out for this person. So you're right. I didn't think of it, but in the same sense, I wasn't sober when I was thinking about this, because I was after glory. Hmm. I was after, you know, like a Leonidas in that movie 300. I was there to show everybody my big shield.
This is Sparta.
Go yourselves. You know, that's what I thought. Excuse my leg, guys. Sorry, I do swear. Please forgive me. I communicate, and it's expressive, and it just makes the talk more colorful. But yeah, I was just there to show face. That was what it was. I didn't think about the ramifications. And because this is also the thing I need to point out. I never expected these ramifications because I never dealt with them before.
Yeah.
When I dealt with these things with non-paying customers with a company that I work for, my CEO would phone the guy and threaten him. tell them straight, if you don't pay me, I'm going to send somebody over to break your legs. That's how they operated. And that's how they still probably do. But anyway, not no point there. But I never had to deal with the fact that if you're not going to pay me, what do I do now? Hmm. So I never thought of it. I never had that experience ready to say to myself, okay, I'm going to fund you a half a million rand. I need to look at points A to D. I didn't look at points A to D. I looked at point A and maybe B and then half of C, and then I went for a beer.
Yeah, I think I just want to touch on two points there. I think that I know we mentioned it early in the thing, and Simon was like, oh, you're an entrepreneur and stuff. And I think people that start businesses, and like, I've had many discussions on what's the difference between a business owner and an entrepreneur. But the problem is, entrepreneur is everyone just associates the flashy cars, the big house, and all of that. So then we're all chasing that, right? Because that's what we think it's about. And I think
exactly.
I just want to add to that, because I don't know if you did study or if you did any degrees or anything, but any degree or going to varsity doesn't teach you what you've learned in the business, what you've learned in business. You know, like I studied a business degree. I was fortunate. But once I got running it and getting in the trenches, like you say, how do you get money from clients? It's still one of the biggest struggles I have. How the heck do you get money from clients who've done the service and they don't pay? What do you do?
Exactly. No, that's a valid point.
Yeah, no, 100%. And it's actually, yeah, I don't know. It's scary how we start seeing like the interlinking with all these podcasts. So like just a pun to listen to the other podcasts, just kidding. but we actually touched on this on our last podcast with Alex, where, you know, airline pilot, you're always thinking, you know, three steps ahead. And we started discussing this like as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, right? So, and it like begs back that question, because we start looking at all these scenarios in life. I think the most recent one would be for anyone that watches like the F1. Now, the recent thing that happened with like Lewis and Max Verstappen, and again, like just, you know, let's just take all the controversy and all the politics out, right? At the end of the day, you know, what kind of happens is if you look at the scenario, Red Bull got in, they had a look three steps ahead, took their guy in, changed for the soft tires, get in, and they increased their chance of winning the race, ultimately winning the race, right?
Exactly.
So tying this back to like entrepreneurship and looking at, you know, because I always say that the best sight is hindsight. And yeah, we can probably speculate now going back, what would you do differently, blah, 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 blah. But I think one of the biggest things for entrepreneurs is sometimes we actually just need to fail. Like sometimes you need to fail in what you're doing, because if you had to go back and look at that client that never paid you, you maybe would have been 6 years, 8 years, 10 years down the line.
Mm.
You would be a mega, mega multimillionaire.
I would have if I didn't deal with them. But
you never had that experience of this oak that never paid you, ripped the rug out of your feet.
Exactly.
And never got you to sit and say like, shit, like my living expenses a month's like 130K.
Yeah.
I'm buying every car. I've got this amazing business, but I've never actually been, like, excuse the pun, but kicked in the nuts.
Exactly. No, I've got a full vasectomy at that flip and on that specific experience. But yeah, it comes down to, and I think this is where, if you are able to go and study for a business degree or anything, good on you. It's you must expand your knowledge. And if you're pre-studying to go into something, it doesn't mean you know what you're going to be doing. It only gives you tools. But I'll give you an example. If you are going to drill a hole in a wall, and you have got a set of tools in front of you. So let's say the wall is going to be your business that you're going to tackle. And now you want to hang a portrait and you've got your set of tools. Let's say it's your business degree. But now they tell you, utilize this, utilize that, do this, do that. Now, but now you go and you grab a fucking hammer and a nail and you clap it into this wall and the nail bends because the wall's too hard. Okay, now I'm not going to use that one. Let me go and use then a drill. So you put a drill in, but then you're using the wrong drill bit. You're using a timber drill bit instead of a masonry drill bit. You need to learn how to action.
To add in, like, the timber drill bit's not working. Let me touch the end to see what.
Yeah, let me. Oh shit! I just burned my finger. Yeah. So, it's good and well to carry the knowledge. It's better to go and action your knowledge. And the only way to action knowledge is to make mistakes. You have to make mistakes. But the problem is, you make a mistake, you take it personal. You think, I'm a screw up. This is not going to happen. This wasn't cut out for me. I want to run back to my old job, or I need to go find a job again. Then your mindset's not right. So it's it's so many things that come into play.
I think I know. We obviously, Simon touched on it as well. And I'm still in two minds on this whole fail fast approach and if it is actually the right way to do it. But my opinion just on the whole make mistakes thing, I think the most important thing about making a mistake is to learn from it. You know what I mean? It's like
exactly. You're
putting a picture on the wall. You've made the mistake. Instead of hitting the nail, you missed and hit your thumb. The idea is that I learn not to hit my thumb again. I think it's like you now, for example, you wouldn't go and take on that big customer because you'd learn from that mistake. Exactly. And it's the same with the whole fail fast mentality. I think the whole idea is the objective of failing shouldn't be to fail, but the objective should be that, hey, I need to fail to be able to learn the lesson so that I don't do it again.
Yeah. So, I mean, like now, you know, maybe paint the picture for us because you've just had the rug pulled out, you know, you've pretty much gone from a lavish lifestyle of 130 grand a month to pretty much like nothing. So
yeah,
like what happened then? How did you recover from this failure? What did you go through? You know, what was like the next venture? Like where was Leo then?
Okay. So I'm going to put this in a two-part way because there's no point in saying what I did. It's also the actions that followed with what I have done. So now business closed down. I lost everything. Me and my wife moved into a shit all of a place. And it was like, literally we survived on 5,000 rand a month for almost for a year.
From 130.
From 130 down to that. So that wasn't the problem for me. And like I said, I didn't have an issue with, you know, not losing my cars. I just knew it's, you know, the business bought them, so the business must go back with the business, you know. If your ship sinks, don't carry the cannons with you. You're going to just be dragged down with it. So we took what we could. We got out of there. And then I was in a mode of survival. It's like, I have to get back onto... So I did drag my cannons with me, funny enough, because I wanted to get back onto my level. I knew I was capable. I knew very well, I can do this again, I can do this again. But now I don't have credits. Bank shut me down. I can't get money from anybody. So I approached some friends. I did some research firstly. So firstly, my name was tarnished in the timber market. I couldn't buy a splint and sell it to a flip and to a toothpick factory. You know, they just didn't. Nobody would have wanted to trade with me because I already had a bad reputation. You know, remember, in any industry that you're in, word gets around about you. Your industries are small. If you are in the medical field, your industry is small. If you're in the IT field, it's small. If you're in advertising, it's small. Everybody knows about everybody. I promise you, you're not unknown out there. You might not be as popular as the high flyer, but you are known. Anyway, long short, I diverted completely. I did some research on doing on-site sandblasting. So I got people to arrange money and by asking people to borrow me some money, which I would pay back, which I couldn't pay back, which is also a disaster. Side note, children, don't ever borrow money if you're not going to pay it back. Please don't. It just makes everything worse. So borrowed money, bought this machine, and I started getting contracts to do truck trailers because I could sell. I can literally take any product and I can go and sell it. So that's what I did. I thought, well, look, This is my ticket out of here. The problem is my mind was not out of that problem. My body was, my faculties were, but not my mind. So when I'm saying faculties, I'm saying your way that you are doing business, your autonomous trade, you know, walking into a place, doing your deal, speaking prices and that. But my self-confidence was gone. So what would I do every time when I finished the contract? I would get my money and then I'll go drink it out. So I never recovered. I didn't allow myself to recover. I didn't save up money. I was in survive mode. I went into limp mode, literally. I just wanted to make it through to the next day and the next day. And I just told myself, don't worry, you're going to come out of this. You're going to be fine. But I didn't. I had that business for about a year. And then I sold it, funny enough, to the company that gave me the contracts for the truck trailers because they couldn't afford to keep me on board anymore. So I sold my business onto theirs. I said to him, okay, fine. Well, here's all my equipment, X, Y, and Z. There it is. Boof. Take it. And some of the money I did pay back, but not everything. So I still owe some money to those people. So yeah, that happens, guys. Like I said, you got to make good on what you do. Be good on your word because it's about the only thing that's actually of value to you is your word. So from there, I within the timber game that I was in. So I would supply to manufacturers that make doors, furniture, like Rochester, supply to their factories that made for them. Anyway, there's a company that makes garage doors. So I would supply timber to them. And then I would normally buy out the garage doors from them pre-made. So I'd buy it like at a cost price, very low cost price. And I actually sold these garage doors to some of the mica stores back then when I had the timber company. So I thought to myself, hang on, I know garage doors. Let's do garage doors. I phoned a couple of friends that were in the construction fields because the game that I've been in circulation has mainly been in construction. So I phoned a couple of buddies up. I said, listen, now I'm going to do garage doors. Do you mind helping me out? Yeah, no problem. When you can, let us know. Phoned up that supplier or that manufacturer. I said to them, look, I'm going to start doing this. Can I buy some doors from you? No problem. We'll arrange it for you. And then I just started. I arranged a bucky, got myself a secondhand bucky, and started doing garage doors. And then I did that for 3 years.
Hmm.
But now between the sandblasting phase and the garage door phase, I had a bad slump. It was in 2017. I got arrested for, not actually arrested, well, I got arrested, but I got pulled over for drunk driving because I was drunk. Like I was proper like a kaya. And got sent to Benoni's jail cells, me and 10 other fellow mates. And yeah, we spent the night there. And I just thought to myself, how low can you go from this? You know, I'm busy drinking. I'm not sorting myself out. I'm not taking responsibility on my actions because I kept on blaming everybody else for my shit that happened. This guy did me in. He took the money away from me. This is why I am where I am. My dad kicked me out of the house. I'm blaming him. I'm hard done by. You know, the world just turned its back on me. That's what I proclaim to everybody. And long short, yeah, ended up in jail for 16 hours. To sober up. And that's not where the pinnacle point changed. I actually, the next weekend, I went out again to drink. And then, boom, got into a car accident. Fortunately, it wasn't my fault. The guy T-boned me, and he was also drunk. But we were both like, you know, I thought to myself, how the hell did I get to this low point in life? And I had an immediate perspective shift, like immediately. I just said to myself, I cannot carry on like this. This is not the way that you handle yourself. Long short from that, we started the garage door business. I ran it for 3 years, and then I sold it on to a BEE company. They did glass and aluminium. I came to a point with that company where I thought to myself, hang on, if I'm not going to, this is not what I want. Because all that I'm doing is I'm just fueling an ego again, where I want to make money. I want to show everybody again that I'm doing fine, X, Y, and Z. And I said to myself, no, 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 no. I've got to get out of this mind frame. This is not the way that you're supposed to be doing things. I sold the business. I was technically on retirement. And this is now this happened in 2019. So end of 2019, company got sold. And I said, okay, I'm going to now go and just take a breather. I'm going to take a whole year and I'm just going to sort myself out, see where I want to go in life, what I actually need to do for myself. So I started painting. So I'm making, you see my portraits that I've painted. And as Murphy would have it, Corona hit us. And then in March, we went into lockdown and my wife's salary got cut. My wife was pregnant. She fell pregnant then. And I thought to myself, well, this is not just brilliant. So all of my saved up money that I was supposed to, that was supposed to carry me, got absorbed like within 3-4 months of basically just surviving because we couldn't just live off my wife's salary anymore. Our salary barely just paid the water and light. So all of that money got delved into that. And then, yeah, I had to go back into working. And what I did was I started working for a hydraulics company. They do hydraulics for all of your earth-moving machinery and that. And they've got major contracts with mines. So it was just account management again. Got a car from them and I would just drive to the mines and then just go and stimulate the business with those guys. So I didn't actually have to go and sell a product onto them. I just had to go and converse with the people. Say, okay, well, what do you need from us? What can we do in this and that? Unfortunately, I didn't get a salary from these people because we just came out of level 4 or level 5. They had to lay some people off. So, of course, you know, you can't pay salary. So this guy was a bit scared to give me a permanent position. He wasn't sure if he was going to be able to keep me.
Hmm.
So I worked there for a penance. Got literally just enough just to cover our rent at the end of the month. And worked there for 3 months and I got an opportunity through a family member to do fire equipment out in North Riding. So that is just, you basically sell fire extinguishers, fire detection systems, you know, life-saving equipment based on fire things. So I didn't know anything about this. I didn't know what the heck they're going on about. So I thought, okay, well, let's go give it a bash. Got nothing to lose. It's a salary. It's going to pay bills. I've got a baby on the way. You know, your perspective completely changes when you know you're becoming a parent. Not even when you see the bump form in your wife's belly. It's when you see that little stick and it says preggers, and then you go to the doctor, you get a blood test and says pregnant. You don't go from a survival mode anymore, or from a, my cat's just ran over the table. You don't go from survival mode. You go into servitude mode, where you want to serve. You just want to make sure that your wife is going to be comfortable. There's not going to be any drama or stress. You are out there to basically provide for your family. That's what you're going to do. And yeah, started there, worked there for 3 months. And I joined subsequently through that business, another fire company. And I've been there now for a year.
I think that's you spoke of it early in the podcast, but it's that whole piece about being like humble as an entrepreneur, like you learn to be humble.
Yeah.
I mean, it must've been like a massive adjustment now, calling your own hours, own leave, own holiday, own paycheck, to now almost fulfilling another entrepreneur's dream. Like how was that like mindset shift for you?
So I've got this, like I said, I'm a bull in a china shop is what the old company used to call me. And the one thing is, I don't do well on authority. I don't like to be told what to do or how to do. There was a mindset that I possessed back then. Don't tell me what to do. I'll just do it. I'm a grown up. You know, I'm a big boy. I know what you want from me, so I'll do it for you. But in any leadership, if you want to become a good leader, I believe John C. Maxwell said this, in order to lead, you must be able to follow. Mm-hmm. If you're not able to take instruction, how are you going to be able to provide instruction to people that's going to be, if you want to own a company one day, how are you going to give people instruction if you can't even be told? And it's not about being told what to do. It's being teachable. Be open to teach, to learn new things so that you can transpose them onto somebody else. Yeah. Take in the good, leave the bad, and then improve on what you've got. And I've got two ways of doing it, and you've got two ways of doing this. And dear readers, I hope you're going to, or listeners, you've got two ways of working at a business. You can work at the business as an employee or as a number, or you can go to work every morning and you envision that business being your business. And you're the CEO, and all that you're doing is you're occupying that occupancy that you're doing at the moment because there's not the right skill available. So play that imaginary thought through. I am a salesman at this company because this company doesn't have the right salesman. I own the business, but I need to get the sales up. So I'm there to improve. I'm there to learn. So you've got to think of it in that way. You know, it's if you are starting a business because you don't want to be told what to do, well, I've got very bad news. So you're not going to have a very successful company. You need to be able to take criticism. You must take the goods with the bads. You can't, like I posted on LinkedIn the other day, was with you on your post there. You cannot pray for rain and be angry about the mud that comes along with the wetness. You must be able to flex on both ways.
Yeah. No, I fully agree. And I think it is exactly like you say, and potentially, you know, what I pick up through your story is almost getting into this next transition is helping you like overcome what kind of happened in the business.
Yeah.
But like you say, you're a bull in the china shop. So, I mean, like what's next on the radar? Because what I'm picking up is like, this is not, you know, call it the journey that you're destined to be. Obviously, you know, there must be another business that you're thinking of that you've got it. So like how did you get to this next business? What is it? Are you happy to share? Like what's your thinking?
Okay. So this is now going to go completely Star Trek. So I hope you're excited. You sit in your seats, please. So by the same time that I stopped drinking, I like literally just stopped the one day. I just stopped, didn't continue it further. And still today, till now, I haven't had any alcohol. And it's you must understand one thing with somebody that's got an addiction problem. It's not the substance that's the problem. It's you that's got the problem. You're just utilizing a substance to motivate whatever you're going through and either pacifying it or amplifying it. That's basically what addiction does to you. So it's not about the substance. I just chose alcohol over drugs. That's my it. And I'm very thankful that it was just alcohol. They never went further than that. In that same year that I quit drinking, so just to throw into this backstory, guys, I had a massive fallout with my father during my initial business that broke down because I was funding him with his farm up in Nelstrom. We had a boer goats operation. Mm. So we were farming boer goats. And I couldn't fund my father anymore. So he actually kicked me out of the house that I was supposed to buy from him. Anyway, my father got cancer. My father passed on. That happened in 2018. And I went through this phase in life where I just thought, like, what the hell is going on? You know, what is life actually all about? Is it just about the suffering? Is this what you do? You've got to start a business. You've got to suffer through the things. You've got to make your money. And eventually, if you're lucky enough, you're successful enough, you're going to retire with a lot of money in the bank. And you can eventually go and do what you want to do at the ripe old age of 65. And I just thought, no, this can't be this. This can't be how life is. You cannot wake up in the morning, do 8 to 5, come home, eat food, shower, sleep, maybe spend an hour or two with your family and then go to bed. And then you repeat the cycle every single day. It's vicious. If you think about it in that form, it's bloody terrifying. So that's why, I am an entrepreneur. I like to have my own time. Guys, you've got limited time on this planet. You've got to utilize every single second of it. And if you're not prepared to go and work for somebody or work for yourself rather, and you're working for somebody, make it an adventure. Make it worth your time. Put in the input, do it. Just don't be complacent in it. So anyway, I listened to some information about this guy called Alan Watts. He's a philosopher. Alan Watts is very predominant between 1912 to 1941. I'm talking on a correction. I might be wrong, but I think it was around about that time. Just go browse him on YouTube. Look, he talks about the universe and he talks about how we all one, and it's got Buddhism involved and all of that and whatnot. I sort of got a bit involved. I got a bit washed away through it because I'm now looking for reason and purpose of who I am and what I am. And he came across psychedelics. Mm. So for you guys out there, psychedelics is not just, people say it's a drug. It's not really a drug unless you're using a pharmacy grade thing. I used Mother Earth's mushrooms. So I went on this mushroom journey for almost about a year. I utilized this sort of as a therapeutic product, as a sort of a healing thing, because I was still battling demons. You know, just because I stopped drinking didn't mean I had negative thoughts. I'm a classic case of anxiety and depression. Depression got very bad. I was at some point in my life very, very close to actually just ending myself. Mm. These things go through your mind when you fail. When you fail dramatically, or you like to think you fail dramatically. So I was just at this point where I just didn't know what to do anymore. I was desperate for answers. So I took these psychedelics. I took them for about a year, but not consecutively, like almost every year on a 3-month cycle. Firstly, you can't take them all the time. It doesn't work like a medication. Your body gets a tolerance in it, and it's extremely powerful things. And all that I basically got out of this was, you know what? You are here where you are in life, where you're supposed to be. So that's the first thing. You're not a mistake. You're not, your actions and choices, yes, will lead you down pathways where you don't want to be. But remember one thing, if you feel you're not where you're supposed to be, then remind yourself right there and then you are learning. Mm. It's learning. It's all about learning. It's all about observing. Because I can guarantee you, wherever you're going to go from now, 5 years forward, something's going to come about where you are going to say, but I know the situation, I've been here before. But you've got to be aware of yourself. You've got to be careful of yourself. You know, otherwise you just go with the flow. Hmm. So yeah, then I thought, well, you know what? I've always wanted to do it. It's always intrigued me. Psychology has always been something fascinating for me. Medicine has been fascinating for me. And unfortunately, I don't have another 7 years to go and study psychology itself. So I took a route a bit more closer to home for me, and that was life coaching. I did a course through this Udemy. So it's not firstly, just to notify, life coaching is not like a certified field. You don't have a practice number or things like that. It's not a regulated field, because life coaching in its essence is what it says. It's about life. It's not about a condition that you're going through. It's not about a situation that is troubling you now short term. It's long term. And you are living long term. You're not short term. You're short term moved, but you've got long term objectives. So I did life coaching, and I did my course. Took about a month. And then, yeah, I'm basically now at a point in life where I want to start breaking through to people that are either going to enter a field of where I've been in the sense of you want to start a business. I want to break through to people that are going through battles. And it's not about telling you what to do. You can never tell a person what to do. You've got your own mind. You're free thinking. That's the beauty of being a human being. You're socially connected. We are all so unique, but we are all connected. But what makes you so unique is that you're able to see things in a different way. Now, I've seen life in various forms.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to say. It's obviously you've done the Udemy course, but just on today's podcast, you've just shared a lot of, I'm not going to call them failures. I'm rather just going to call them lessons, but there's been a lot of lessons that you've learned, and it's through those lessons that you can help and guide people. I think that's the really important thing about life coaching, is that the coach, it's exactly, I see it as a sports coach, you know, like your sports coach helps you to get fitter. They're not going to be the one doing the 10 push-ups for you. That's not what a life coach is going to do. So I think, unfortunately, we're going to have to cut it there. I think we're already on the hour mark, want to say, Leo, thank you so much. Thank you for your vulnerability, first of all, for sharing with our guests. I think it's been really epic. I do definitely think, Simon, we need to organize another episode which we can just focus around the life coaching element and how that can help business coaches. But I want to just end off with probably one final question from my side, and then Simon can also have one final one. But Leo, if you had to tell your 21-year-old self one lesson, what would it be?
Take it slow in business. Take it slow. Don't try and impress anybody except yourself. You will never be better than anybody else. You cannot be better than anybody else. You can only be better than yourself. So take it slow, take your time, and practice patience. And believe me, for a 21-year-old, that is like saying, you can't do a backflip into the pool. You know, it's extremely difficult. But take it slow. Just take it slow and be patient. It comes. Your things come to you the way that they're supposed to. Don't force it. If you force it, you're going to break it.
Brilliant. Yeah, and I think in closing, Leo, thanks again so much. In terms of platforms for people to reach out, for our listeners to get hold of you, if they're looking for life coaching or just general advice, I mean, what's the best platform to reach you?
Okay, so I've got a webpage. It's pagelifecoach.com. The page is in a constant evolutionary form. So it's I'm always editing and changing. If you go onto the, I would say the pricing section, just look at the prices. Don't get a skrik. Just email me first before you neglect anything in there. You know, that is basically more to ward off specifics that are just going to waste their time. You know, it's a serious thing in the sense of, if you really think that you need to make change, bring change forth, but you're not sure where to look at it, just pop me an email and we can just have a quick conversation. I won't even bill you on it. I mean, if you want to talk, just at least go and talk to somebody. And if I can just give you some advice, and I know this is probably going to sound very weird, but if you're going to talk deep things and it's serious matters, discussing it with a complete stranger like me and discussing it with a friend is not going to give you the same result. Friends will always be pro, but I'm going to call you on your shit, tell you straight away, dude, you're making a mistake if you're looking at this and this and this. And there will be an explanation. I'm not going to tell you what you need to do. I'm going to give you that raw benefit of this is what you need to hear and this is what you need to do. And from there, you can still decide. It's your life. You do it the way you want to do it. But you are more than welcome to get in touch with me. And it's all openness. You've got to be brave. You've got to be open. And if you are honest about it, I guarantee you, you will not be disappointed in what you're going to be able to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, yeah, we'll post all the links in our bio, and yeah, people can reach out to you from there. So again, yeah. Thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.